Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yatah Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrata Tam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sri Vishnu Sahasranama. Continuing, I've just been reading in the Bhagavatam about Hiranyakashipu, and I was thinking, that's also a name for Vishnu. Actually, he's the real Hiranyakashipu. Golden bed, who should have a golden bed but Vishnu? So anyone who, all these names, they're just appropriated. The real Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, golden eyes, is Vishnu. Ravana, who makes all the worlds cry, makes everyone cry. Well, I guess the gopis might say that to Krishna. Or the devotees may say he makes them cry in ecstasy. Not that they're not... Gopis are not devotees, but either way, either crying in happiness or crying in prematur, afflicted by love, the sweet unhappiness of love, either way. So, like this, there are some demons. Hayagriva, there's a demon we'll find in the Bhagavatam. His name's Hayagriva, horsehead. Horse neck, literally. So Vishnu appears like that, some demon like that also. Anyway, that's just a little thought there. Several of these names, which I discussed last time, Bharata, Prabhu, Prabhava, these three names, they all come in one verse of Bhagavad Gita, in which Krishna describes himself as Gatir Bharta Prabhu Sakshi Nivasa Sharanam Suhrit Prabhava Pralaya Sthanam Nidhanam Bijam Avyayam. So three names come there, Bharata, Prabhu, and Prabhava. All in the same area, they come in one verse of Gita. And also, Nidhiravyayam comes in this part of Vishnu Sahasranama. So, Nidhanam Bijamavyayam. It's similar. Prabhavaha, of course, that name is explained by Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita when he says, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavaha. He is that person, Aham, by which everything is generated. Now, I'm going backwards here because it often happens that speak about something and then some more thoughts come afterward. So this name Bharata means supporter in the sense of what? Literal support. So, yes, just like Mahi Bharata, the support of the earth or the support of the universe, is Ananta Deva, and that function he performs in the material world, and the spiritual world is supported by Balaram, who is Anantadev. So he's the support, Balaram supports the spiritual He holds it all together. Again, this gravity idea. Prabhupada says, what gravity? It's Balaram Shakti that holds it. It's Balaram who holds everything. By his strength, he holds everything together. Now, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Balaram is non-different from him, and different also. Who's more powerful, Krishna or Balaram? The well-known question which Prabhupada answered, that Krishna's more powerful because Balaram is leaning on him. So, this is Prabhupada Pranama. Sorry, Pramana. Evidence from Prabhupada. That just reminds me of something else. Nothing to do with Vishnu Sahasranama. But it's funny, and it's Krishna conscious. That I listened to a lecture of Giriraj Swami that he'd given. Just I met him a few months ago in Los Angeles. He told me he'd given a class, so I got the recently in Los Angeles, there in Los Angeles, ISKCON. So I downloaded that and listened to it. And at the end of the class came the question that the sap of trees is considered or is polluted with the sin of killing a brahmana, that Indradev distributed 1/4 of the reactions to the earth, to trees, to water, and to women. So, for this reason, one should not drink the sap of trees. And then a devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, well, we take this date ras, that's the sap of trees. And so, why do we do that? Prabhupada said, because it tastes so good. And then Giriraj says, hey, this is first class pramana. Prabhupada said. So the question, who is more powerful, Krishna or Balaram? I mean, if you're a supporter of Balaram, you'd say, no, Balaram is putting his arm around Krishna to protect him. It's like an elder brother protecting him. But we can see that Srila Prabhupada in the Leela between Krishna and Balaram, he's on Krishna's side, it seems. Who knows? Maybe he's on Balaram's side, but that day he had a fight with Balaram or something. I mean, this is all in the realm of conjecture. So, Balaram is the support of the... When we say the support, he supports the earth. He's also the supporter of the devotees in another sense. There's like moral support, and there is support in this, the provider of everything. Krishna provides for everyone, not only for the non-devotees also. Even the demons and atheists, they are provided for by Krishna. Although they also get their reactions in due course of time. So that these are all essential characteristics of the Supreme. If he doesn't support Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yogadadhati Kama, if he's not providing everything for everyone, then he's not God. But he's particularly the gives a particular eye to his devotees. Ananyas chintayanto mang ye janah paryopasate te sham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. Krishna says that I personally carry what is needed for the devotees, those who are completely absorbed in me without deviation to anything else. Ananyas chintayanto mang, without going to, thinking of me without thinking of anything else. Nityabhiyuktanam, fully engaged, always, for such devotees, says, Krishna says, I personally carry what they need. And there's that story which Srila Prabhupada told of the one pundit who was writing a commentary on Gita, and he didn't like, he thought that wasn't very devotional, that the devotee should, that Krishna should carry something for the devotee, because devotees are supposed to do it, serve Krishna. So he struck out that Vahamyaham, I carry. He struck that out of his rendition of Gita and went to take his midday bath. In the meantime, his wife is there at home. In the meantime, two young boys come. And one black and one white, guess who they are? Carrying so many things, because the Brahmin usually, they live in poverty. I mean, there's not necessarily, but generally they prefer to live in poverty. Just their faith in Krishna is that they, is that every day what they need they take and not anymore. And that's it. The next day what will happen? They will see. Krishna will sing. Like the birds, you see. The birds get up in the morning, they start singing. They don't start worrying where our food will come from. So they have more faith in God. They're not philosophers. But anyway, something will be there. So the two boys came with baskets of ghee and grains and all items required for cooking. And she said, who sent you with all these things? I said, your husband sent us. But she noticed that they had all scratches on their body, like they'd been beaten. And they said, all right, come in. He's just gone to take bath. You wait till he comes. He said, no, we won't wait. Look at these marks on our body. He beat us and scratched us. We're not waiting for him. We're going right away. So then she... What was that? No, I'm getting mixed up with the story of Jayadev. There's a similar story of Jayadev Goswami. So then he came back. And she berated him. First of all, he saw so many things. Ghee, grains, all the items required for cooking. And where did that come from? He said, you should know, you sent the boy. What are you talking about? You see those boys, you beat them, they're so cruel. How have you become so cruel? What are you talking about? You know, what are you talking about? And then he understood that because he had crossed out, Vahamyaham, I bring, I carry. That was just like beating and scratching Krishna. They had come and personally shown that I carry, they personally brought on their head so many things. I personally carry for the devotees. So Krishna, he is the supporter and protector of the devotees, particularly the devotees. Bharata, one meaning is husband. So does it mean that every husband is Vishnu? Just like once in Bangladesh, there's one bogus avatar out of many called Jagat Bandhu. There. So one of his supporters, who is actually materially very intelligent, he was the permanent financial advisor to the government of Pakistan before Pakistan got split into Pakistan and Bangladesh. He was a Bengali, but they kept him as their... So he's very intelligent materially. But, as is quite common, we find many people are very intelligent materially, but very stupid spiritually. So... He was coming from that area of Bangladesh where that particular so-called avatar comes from, or came from. He gave the evidence. You see, Jagat Bandhu is the name of Vishnu, so that means he's Vishnu. Yeah, very stupid idea. His own name was, actually I better not say his name, just in case. I don't want to upset his family members. His own name is also a name of Vishnu. Then he's Vishnu also. There's so many boys given the name Gopal, Govinda, Madhava. Does it mean they're Vishnu? So Bharata means husband. And actually the wife is supposed to see the husband as God. But as the, in the sense, the representative of God. Pati Devata. So actually, Krishna, he's also husband. He's the husband of Rukmini. And 16,107 others also. So he's also a husband. But he's also the husband in the truest sense, in that he's the Lord and Master of all living beings. He is Purusha and everything else is Prakriti. So all living beings are, in one sense, can be considered the wives or the subordinate to Vishnu. This is why I say that, you know, if you want to call all the women Prabhu, better call all the men Mataji. Because we're all Prakriti. If you want to get really ontological, then just call everyone Mataji, as is just as good. There are differences in the material world. If you want to eliminate them, then do it on this fully spiritual platform and just call everyone Mataji. So, Krishna is the husband of everyone, and actually, Krishna can be your husband. You want? Because if you want, doesn't mean just like, oh yeah. But you have, if one intensely desires, one can have Krishna as his husband, like the gopis. They desired that. And their desire was so strong that Krishna actually became their husband. That's the meaning of the Vastraharan Leela, the Krishna's stealing the clothes of the gopis. So there's a few more thoughts on the word Bharata. Then, to finish this verse, there are two very important names. When we say important, of course, all are important, but some are, well, I'll tell you the names. Prabhu and Ishvara. So important in the sense that these are very common names. They're commonly used to mean the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, the Christians in India, these two terms they use for God. They use Prabhu and Ishvara, particularly these two terms. They appropriate and pretend to be kind of Hindu and in this way cheat people. So, Prabhu is understood to mean master, but the etymological derivation is that Prabhu means mighty, powerful, it's another term for, and rich, and thus the master, thus the leader. So, this point is very, when I say it's an important name, it's an essential point to understand. That Krishna is the husband of everyone, that's a somewhat esoteric point to understand. That he is the master of everyone, the controller of the master, the lord of everyone. This is a basic point we have to understand. Before we get to the more esoteric points, we have to understand the basic points. We see Srila Prabhupada was always preaching Bhagavad Gita philosophy. And even when he spoke on more esoteric aspects, he would always do so, giving the basis to remind us the basic points. So this basic point that he is the master. This is practically all we have to understand. He is the master. We are not the controller. The next name also is very similar to that. I'll go into that. Shankaracharya gives another understanding or explanation of Prabhu. That one who is competent to perform all actions in the best possible way. That's another meaning of Prabhu. One who's fully competent to do everything. So no one can claim such a thing. Everyone in this world has some kind of competence. Not everyone has every kind of competence. That's why society is divided into Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, and lower than Shudras. They have different areas of competence. And even among Brahmanas, some are good at are particularly competent at cooking, some are particularly competent at teaching, so they're different. Among Shudras, some are laborers, but there are some, they may be very expert artists, musicians, play actors in the drama, these are all carpenters. So different areas of competence. But Krishna, he is the source of all competence. All abilities come from him. And therefore, he is Prabhu. And he's the master of all abilities. He's competent in everything. If anyone can do anything, it's because they have a little borrowed power from Krishna. Krishna has invested a little of his potency. That, oh, now someone can cook very nicely. So that's Krishna. Actually, in Vaishnava temples, we always say that the kitchen is the place of Lakshmi or Radharani. That's her domain where she pleases Krishna by cooking for Krishna. So anyone who can cook nicely for Krishna, it's understood that they're blessed by they themselves should understand it. If there's anything I'm able to do nicely, it's Radharani's blessing. Because she desires that Krishna will be pleased. So, all Prabhutva, or well, that means domination, that word domination. But Krishna dominates not just by blunt force. That's one way to dominate. But he dominates by his qualities that naturally people like to, those who are devotees, they naturally like to surrender to him. Because he's all attractive. Everything he does so well, so nicely, so expertly, so effortlessly, so elegantly, that everyone can understand. He's superior in all respects. And therefore people are attracted to him. There are different ways to dominate. One is by force, and the other is by love. So people love Krishna because he's expert in everything, and he uses all his abilities he does dominate, but not in the sense of crushing others. But he uses all his abilities just like the gopis dress nicely so Krishna will be pleased. Krishna dresses very nicely so that his devotees will be pleased. The pujaris dress Krishna so that everyone who comes, they'll be attracted. Oh, Krishna looks so nice. But actually, what can they do? Because Krishna himself is the whatever attraction is in the clothing and the jewelry, that also comes from Krishna. Whatever ability is there to dress him, that also comes from Krishna. But Krishna apportions some of his abilities to different people and in different objects so that he shares with others the abilities, and it may seem as if they are themselves independently competent. But we should know that this, everything is coming from Krishna, is meant to be offered to Krishna. And if we offer to Krishna, we become ourselves very happy. And in this way, Krishna increases the happiness of everyone. This way, he is Prabhu. He is the master of love. And if you don't like to approach him like that, then he's still the master. Even if you deny it, he's still the master, but then you have to deal with him in another way. If you deny him, just like Kamsa, he refused to accept that Krishna had any abilities. There was this, you know. People are praising him, he's just a little boy. There was some little water snake called Kalaya, which he suppressed. Now, the most dangerous snake in the history. And Krishna just playfully suppressed him by dancing on him. But Kamsa couldn't give any credit to Krishna. Some water snake he was able to suppress, and people are praising him. And there was some little stone which he lifted up, and people are praising him. He refused to accept Krishna's greatness. Then Krishna came and punched him out. He didn't, you see, Kamsa, he wanted to minimize Krishna. You see, he's just a useless boy, little boy, why they're praising. So Kamsa, he's a great hero. There should have been a big fight with all weapons, but Krishna just punched him and killed him, that's all. So that Kamsa wouldn't even have the benefit of having said, well, he put up a good fight. He just like, even the wrestlers who he killed first, he gave more of a fight. But Kamsa just quickly finished him off. That's all. As if he's just some insignificant little toy. So that's what Kamsa, that's how he met his Prabhu. This Krishna is all powerful. Prabhu. Mighty, powerful. If you don't want to accept, well, still you have to accept. That means he's the master is one who's the master, whether or not you like it. Not like the modern politicians. You can throw them out, and if they don't, or they get thrown out in course of time. But there's no question of Krishna being thrown out of anything. Another meaning of Prabhu. There are so many meanings. This is given by Parashara Bhatta. The most powerful, because he can bestow fruits such as the enjoyment of the pleasures associated with those of Brahma. Is it? No. Bhoga Moksha. He gives the fruits. Phala Prada Prabhu. Somehow that, I don't know. The etymological derivation. So what you get if you do sacrifices for going to the heavenly planets, the bestower is ultimately Krishna. What is that in Bhagavad Gita? He says that people worship different gods, but actually I am the, whatever they give, that is given by me. What is that verse? Tasya tasya achalang shatam tam eva vidadhami aham. And that means I give the immovable faith in them. But there's in that. Mayaiva vihitan hitan means they worship in an improper way. But what's that? Anyway, there's that verse in Bhagavad Gita which we all know, but which we're all forgetting. Because we can blame it on Krishna. Because he gives forgetfulness also. He gives everything. What does it mean to give forgetfulness? Because forgetfulness is the absence of memory. So Krishna gives whatever. We may think that there are different demigods, they're giving different things, but ultimately the giver is Krishna. Just like Prabhupada often gave that example of the communists would come to the church. Where they, in Russia, during the time of the revolution period, almost 100 years ago. And they say, so you prayed in the church, you prayed for bread? Yes. Did God give you bread? No. So why don't you pray to us for bread? Oh, communist comrades, give us bread. Okay, and then have a truck. Means a horse truck, probably in those days. And give bread. And see, we're better than God. And the foolish people believed them and became communists and atheists. But Prabhupada said the rascal communists, they didn't make them. Where'd the grains come from? Without God's sanction, the grains won't grow. They can't produce bread. Then they're not the ultimate bestowers. Ultimate, he is the ultimate. So the next name, of course all these names are very much interrelated. Ishvara, another very well-known name, common name. We find in Bhagavad Gita this name Krishna repeatedly uses in relation to himself, and sometimes speaks about himself in the third person as Ishvara. This name is related with another very common term, Aishvarya. Which means opulence. So, one who has all opulence is called Ishvara, which means the controller, because he has everything. Therefore, he's the controller of everything. Oh, I have some other notes here which I'm forgetting to look at. Yeah, so it's controller of the wind also. The wind blows out of fear of him. We find in the Bhagavatam and in the Upanishads. The sun shines out of fear of him. The rain falls out of fear of him. So, Ishvara, of course there are many Ishvaras, the controller. One who is capable, one who has the ability to do anything without the help of any other beings or things. He's the Ishvara. He's the creator. How does he create? He does so by his own desire, that's all. He doesn't have to bring bags of cement and mix them up and make an earth. But just out of his desire, that's all. Even creation, there's another word coming up next word, Swayambhu. So that name also is known for Brahma, because he's born from Vishnu without Vishnu's wife being involved. So Vishnu is the original Swayambhu, born by himself, or self-existing in this case, a different meaning in the case of Vishnu. So he doesn't need anyone's help. That's a real Ishvara. Someone in this world may be Ishvara, but just like the captain of a ship is the Ishvara, but if all the sailors mutiny against him, then he's no longer the Ishvara. Or maybe the leader of a country, but as happens practically every week in some country around the world, some leader gets deposed, either electorally, democratically thrown out, or by force thrown out, or assassinated, or whatever. So, one can control others in this world by the force of fear, or by their consent. Just like in a company, the workers agree to do what the boss says because he pays them. If he didn't pay them, then they'd go on strike. Or they'd protest. But Krishna is the real Ishvara because he doesn't, there's no question of, even those who deny him, they're also controlled by him. There's no question of a revolution. just like in Christian mythology. There was one angel, which is another mythology. What was the name? Lucifer. Lucifer. And Lucifer rebelled against God. And it's going on even today. God's just managing to keep Lucifer under control. But more or less, it's a hard struggle. And if you look at it objectively, it looks like Satan's in control of this world anyway, more than God. But this is mythology. Krishna, Ishvara means unrivaled. There's no question of any rivalry. The only rivalry to Krishna's supremacy is by the love of his devotees, which is it's not by force, but by love, they can bring him under control. Ishvari, the name of Radha, Ishvari, she controls even the controller. Raja Rajeshwari is a common term in India. The Raja means the king of everyone. But there's also the Rajeshwari, the queen who controls the king. So that principle comes right down from the top, from the very top. But it's not something that we talk about much. Not that we're embarrassed, but it's an intimate principle. So there's also Radha Sahasranam. But now we're discussing Vishnu Sahasranam. So he has the ability to do anything without the help of any others. Therefore he is Ishvara in the true sense, in the fullest sense. Everyone is a controller to some extent. And everyone likes to have that sense of controlling. As Srila Prabhupada noted, that this... you see, just like in a family, there's the controller, supposed to be the father. In some business, there's the controller is the boss. In a country, the controller is the king or the president or whatever. Then there are different controllers. The Brahma, Indra, Chandra, Vayu, different demigods. But the supreme controller is Krishna. If we find... there's that story that someone, he was in the village, he was the servant of some man, but he saw that this man who he's serving in the village, he's subordinate to the head of the village. So he thought, well, I'm going to serve. Why don't I serve the biggest person, the best person? Why serve some small person? So he went to serve the biggest person, the head man in the village. Now he thought, that's better. Then one day some man came around with all with soldiers and bugles and elephants. He was the tax collector. Comes around once a year and he saw that the head of the village offered all respect to him, gave him money. The soldiers are there in case people don't want to give the money. And then when money means gold and other such valuable things. And once they get the valuable things, then to protect it also, the soldiers are required. So then this servant thought, hey, wait a minute. This head man of the village is subordinate to this man who's come around. So he left that head man of the village and became the servant of the tax collector. So he went around where he saw wherever he went, he was... everyone is offering him respect, so many things. So, this is much better. He's a much bigger person. Then eventually, they got back to the capital and saw that the tax collector came and bowed down to the king. And they thought, oh, there's someone bigger than him. So then he started serving the king. And then the king is so opulent with a huge palace and people are coming and serving him in so many respects. Then one day the king's guru came and the king bowed down to him. So So he became a servant of the Guru. And he said, why do you want to the Guru's? He said, why do you want to serve me? And he told his whole story. And so I see that you're the biggest of all. He said, I'm not the biggest of all. The biggest of all is Krishna. You should serve him. So everyone is subordinate to everyone else, but he who is not subordinate to anyone else, he is Parameshwara, Ishvara Paramakrishna, or Sarveshwara. This Shankaracharya in his commentary quotes from Mandukya Upanishad. Esha Sarveshwaraha. He is the Lord of all and everything, who has unlimited lordliness and power over all things. So actually, Ishvara, in the proper and complete sense of the term, just like Bharata may mean husband, does mean husband, but in the proper and complete sense of the term, means the supreme husband. So Ishvara, that word may be given to various persons. King is also called Ishvara, or Prabhu of a certain country. Goreshwar, that name we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Nawab Hussain Shah was referred to as Goreshwar, the king of Gora, the area of West Bengal. But in the proper sense, that refers to who is controlling without being controlled by others. This word is derived from Aishwarya, also from the word Ishta, which means one's preference or desire. So this Ishvara also, Ishte iti Ishvara, one can do whatever he wills without the help of anything else, is also called Ishvara. So this this point that we are controlled, so find out who are we controlled by. This is the essential understanding that Srila Prabhupada, he explained so many times. And yes, I said that ahanka, the sense that I am the doer, I am doing, without understanding that we are controlled, there is an ultimate controller, and that therefore our position is to recognize that we are controlled and submit to that control. So it's essential to understand that we are controlled. We cannot claim independence. Of course, we can claim independence, but it is foolish to do so because we are forced to grow old, to be sick, to die. There's one exchange of Srila Prabhupada with some young, independently minded person, I think it was in New York in 1967, from those early days, 67, 68, in which the person was trying to claim that, you see, I'm not forced. Prabhupada in his lecture said, everyone is forced by material nature to grow old, to die, to be sick. And he said, no, I'm not forced. I'm free. I'm independent. So Prabhupada in mock incredulity, said, oh, you've never been sick? And the hippie in reply said, well, what do you mean by sickness? You know, brilliant response. And Prabhupada said, oh, you don't know what sickness is? You've never been sick? Have you never been sick? Have you ever had any sickness? He said, well, I've had the mumps and flu. You know, some people are so, you know, they're so stupid, you have to like take them down to the very basic, very basic point. They have to admit, yes, I've had flu. Then did you want to have flu? They don't want to say, they don't want to admit it. So bad things happen to you. Do you want it? Well, it's all my pastime. So, okay, now for your pastimes, we're now going to hit you on the head with a baseball. What do they call that? What do they call it? A cricket bat, we'll do in India. I don't know what it's called. A baseball stick or whatever it is. You don't know either. There's no from that. So we're now going to hit you on the head with a cricket bat. And it's all your pastimes, you see. You're in control. It's only you who desired it. You're God, you're in control of everything, right? So when I hit you over the head, it's all by your desire. So argumentum ad absurdum. That's, you take them to the absurdity of their own. Still people, scissors philosophy. So any intelligent person will admit that there is some higher, there is some power. We don't know what it is, but there is some higher principle by which we are forced to die, to grow old, sometimes to slip and fall over and hurt ourselves. It's not by chance. Simply by this whole idea that everything has come into being by chance. So again, people who say by chance, you hit them on the head with a cricket bat and said, well, it's just chance, that's all. Just by chance, I got an idea to hit you on the head with a cricket bat. So it's just a random interaction of molecules. So what does it matter that you feel some pain? But anyway, you're just molecules anyway. So what does it matter? Just some different molecules interacting in a different way, that's all. So it's not by chance any sane person should accept that we are controlled, there is some control. So who is controlling, the question should come. Because control, as we see in this world, comes from a person. Who is controlling? That controller is Ishvara. So this Ishvara term, it comes in Vedic philosophy, Mayavadis, the Sankhyas, the follower of Sankhya philosophy. They also have in their philosophical system a concept of Ishvara. But it's an improper concept of Ishvara, because they say that Ishvara is controlling, but Ishvara is also not a permanent principle or not a person. But as we find in Vishnu Sahasranam, one of the names of Vishnu is also Purusha. He's a person. Purusha presides over Prakriti. So Ishvara, the supreme controller, Sarveshvara, or as Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings about him, to me Sarveshvareshvara. Even someone may be, within a certain sphere, someone may be considered the Sarveshvara. He's overseeing other Ishvaras. But then, over and above all others, is Krishna. So you may think, well, this is all philosophy, and but actually you want to love Krishna. So, I'll get back to that point. To me, so. So yeah, another point about his being the controller. He's Sarveshvara. He's also Sarvagya, which means he knows everything. Now you cannot properly control everything, or you can't even properly control anything, unless you know everything about it. If you don't know what's going on or how something functions, you can't properly be, you can't control it. So, one name of Krishna, which we'll find in Vishnu Sahasranam, Sarvagya, he knows everything. Now, it is clearly far beyond our understanding how a person, a Purusha, can know everything. When our spectrum of knowledge is extremely limited. Even within the realm of possibility of what we could know, we know very little. What can we know? We can know that which we can see, hear, touch, smell, feel, taste, and on the basis of those sensual experiences, we can speculate further. This is called knowledge. Material knowledge means we touch, taste, smell, feel, hear, see, and on the basis of that, we make further speculations. And that's called material knowledge. But our ability to, our spectrum of seeing is extremely limited. Within certain light wavelengths, we can see. Within the, what do you call that? The scope of our eyes, the, what's there, some word for that? What's that mean? Visible range of our eyes. That can be enhanced by making telescopes or microscopes. But still our ability to see is very limited. And even at any moment, there are innumerable sense perceptions of which we can only, practically we can't process more than one or two or maximum three at a time. And if we can only fully process to the best of our ability one at a time, that's called focusing or concentration. Just like I'm sitting here, and if I start to think about it, I'm seeing all the time so many different trees, the reflection of light on the leaves of the trees over there, the flowers of the trees, the bricks at the back, the temple construction at the back, the hill in the distance. There's so many things I'm seeing, but I'm not consciously aware of them. And the birds are chirping. There's some whirring sound in the background, which I wasn't aware of. There's so many sensual data that we are in the sphere of, but which we don't accept because we only have ability to process only a very limited amount. So it is being extremely small. And with very limited, even what we can process, we do so with very limited intelligence. It's far beyond our understanding how a person can know everything and control everything. And we, you know, even to control a few children is a great endeavor, as any parent knows or any teacher knows. And after some time, they just become independent anyway. They don't, you can't control them. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your control as the almost dead. Well, he's been almost dead all his life, but he must be over 70 now, the great Bob Dylan, who you also probably have never heard of if you're from India, although he's a household name. In the good old West, the Wild West. So, it's totally beyond our ability to comprehend how anyone can any one person can control everything and know everything in all respects. Therefore, the obvious conclusion is there's no God. Because we can't understand it, means there's no God, said Dr. Frog, the famous Dr. Frog. You get a PhD and a Nobel Prize from another frog. So he can give you a prize for croaking in a new tune. The same, it's actually the same tune. No God. But it sounds very sweet to the other frogs. The other way of approaching this problem, if you want to call it philosophical problem, is to accept that there is a supreme controller, but is beyond our capacity to comprehend. And actually, to comprehend anything is beyond our ability, because he gives that ability also. Whatever ability we have comes from him. So you can take it either way. You can say, the atheist will say, well, it's just blind faith in God. And we can say, it's just blind faith, there's no God. According to your empiricism and rationalism and whatnot, you can't prove there's no God, neither can you prove there's God. So, either way, if you want to get down to it, it's like, well, what we can observe, observable reality, as if observable reality, the whole of reality, is within the spectrum of what they can observe and what they can understand with their tiny intelligence. So, in the school, the atheists, they get failed by God. When they come to the exam, at the time of death, they get failed. Oh, I'm a Nobel Prize winner. Oh, okay, no need to see anything more. Automatically failed. That's all. It's not a qualification, it's a disqualification. For understanding God. The very idea that we are... Science, we're making advancement. See, we're finding out so many things. The whole attitude that they have is the pride of a frog. That's all. Proud frogs. Nothing to be proud of, but proud nevertheless. Now, so understanding the supreme controller, the controller of everything. All right, let's have a little sweetness now from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. His song from Sharanagati. Tumi Sarveshwareshwara. You, Tumi Sarveshwareshwara Vrajendra Kumar. Krishna, who is the son of Maharaj Nanda, which means he's controlled by Maharaj Nanda. Of course, not that much. I mean, when the gopis say, we'll complain about you to Nanda Maharaj, Krishna says, I don't care. He's an old man, what can he do to me? So, Vrajendra Kumar, the son of Nanda Maharaj, you are the supreme controller of all controllers. Tomar Ichchai Bishe Srijan Shangha. By your desire, the universe is created and destroyed. Tava Ichcha Moto Brahma Karen Srijan. By your wish, Brahma performs the act of creation, creates the universe. Tava Ichcha Moto Vishnu Karen Apalan. By your desire, Vishnu maintains everything. It's praying to Krishna, not Vishnu. Tava Ichcha Mote Shiva Karen Shangha. By your desire, Shiva destroys. Tava Ichcha Mote Maya Shrije Karaga. By your desire, Maya creates the prison. That's interesting. Brahma creates the world and Maya creates the prison. Well, what's the difference? The difference is the Maya means illusion. The world in itself is not a prison, but it's our perception of it as our place for enjoyment that makes it a prison. Tava Ichcha Mate Jibe Janama Maran. By your desire, the jivas are born and die. Samriddhi Nipata Dukha Shukha Sangatan. And everything else that goes along with it. Flourishing, and then again, becoming rich and opulent, and sometimes they become very rich enough, sometimes they lose everything, fall down from that position, sometimes unhappy, sometimes happy. Miche maya baddha jeev asha pa she fire, by this false representation of maya, the, by which the jivas are bound up, they are bound up by material hopes, and in this way they go round and round in material life. Tava iccha bina kichu karite na pari, but they cannot do anything unless you sanction it. So I may say, well, this is in Sharanagati, which is a very sweet collection of songs. Collection of sweet songs. So how is it that all this stuff about creating, maintaining, and where did that all come from? So now comes the sweet part. Tumito rokok ar palak ama. You see, the bharata means the one who supports or maintains. So that's included within Ishvara. One who maintains. So you are, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says to Krishna, you are my protector and maintainer. So there's the sweetness. That though he's got all the universe, he's maintaining everything, overseeing everything, big Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, they cannot do anything without him. But you are my own personal protector and maintainer. Even though you're so great, that you're personally looking after me. Toma charan bina asha nahiya. I have no other desire than your feet, your lotus feet. So before it was said that, miche maya baddha jeev asha pashe fir. The hope for material happiness binds us up in this world and causes us to rotate in birth and death, but the desire to serve Krishna's lotus feet, the aspiration to attain to his lotus feet, that is the very means of salvation, or it is in itself salvation. Nija bala cheshta prati bharashacharya. The idea, the faith that I, by my own strength, by my own endeavor, I shall do ahankara vimurhatma kartahamiti manyat. That idea I've given up, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. This is the meaning of accepting him as the Ishvara. We say he's God, but when I do something good, I get the credit. When something goes wrong, it's his fault. I believe in God. Not that believing in God. That is not acceptable. Tomar ichai achi nirbhar karya. So I'm dependent on this understanding that I am is all according to your desire. Bhakati binoda ati dina akinchan. Tomar ichai tar jivan amaran. Bhaktivinoda, declaring himself to be very low, means very humble and submissive in outlook, with akinchan, nothing else but Krishna. No desire for anything in the universe, only desire for Krishna. He accepts that, yes. He simply accepts that my birth and death and everything else, it's simply according to your desire. So this is the meaning of accepting Krishna as the Ishvara. That you are the controller, I am subordinate to your desire. That's all. Whatever you want. I'm submitting. I'm not protesting. I'm not trying to do anything independently. I'm simply trying to serve you. So this is the implication of Ishvara in relation to us. We are the servants, Ishvara Paramakrishna, Jivesuru Pari Krishna Nitya Das, and one who simply accepts this simple fact, they become very happy and they can relish the sweetness of being a servant of Krishna. And we'll finish there today, just exactly 9 o'clock, by Krishna's control, Krishna in the form of time. Any question about this or comment? Yeah.
Where is the line for how to depend on Krishna and not to have tendency like?
Yeah, everything's done by Krishna, so I'll just go to sleep. No need for me to do any work. That's one way of looking at it. As Prabhupada said, that Krishna didn't tell Arjuna that I'm God and I'm looking after you, so you just go to sleep on this chariot and I'll finish off the war for you. He didn't tell him that. The other thing you're saying, you do service.
No, not to have a tendency to engage Krishna in service to ourselves.
Not to engage Krishna in service to ourselves.
Yeah.
That you're my protector, so that I was talking about the other day, that you don't put the seatbelt on because you say, anyway, Krishna's protecting me. So we can drive 200 kilometers an hour, no seatbelt, and not even looking at the road, and Krishna's obliged to protect me. That's a misunderstanding. That we think that Krishna is obliged to... See, I'm a devotee, so Krishna's obliged to... Why isn't he bringing me ghee and grains? See, he's not doing what he says in Bhagavad Gita. But yoga kshemam vahami aham, I bring what they need. If Krishna decides, he might decide that you need nothing. Better for you to be poor. That you have to be ready to accept also. We find that when Krishna visited Mithila, he expanded himself into two forms because he had two very great devotees. One was the king, Bahulashva, yeah. And the other was a very poor brahmana, Shutadeva. So Krishna gave one a lot of material opulence and one no material opulence, but ultimately he gave himself to both of them. So one who has any material desire to approach Krishna, they cannot actually approach him. He can't understand anything about him. Tvam akinchana gochara. Krishna is accessible to those who are not trying to squeeze something out of him for their own benefit, conceived of as being something separate from Krishna. He can't understand at all. That's why I think there's interfaith and all this. If we're we should educate these people. Actually, interfaith, but what are they don't even have the first basic understanding. What to speak of God, they don't even understand the difference between the soul and the body. They think I am the body and God, who doesn't have a body, mostly they think, his duty is to make my body happy. And what are you going to discuss with such people? We're not great, but the knowledge by Prabhupada's grace, we've got this clearly knowledge on a completely different level. So I mean, even in the school, you don't put 5-year-old students of 1 + 1 = 2 together with those who are already studying algebra. They're putting 2 bricks together and then put another 3 bricks and then they learn 2 + 3 = 5. And what are they going to discuss about algebra? x² × y² = Anyone dare to give an answer? See, I'm also stuck. Is it xy squared or 2xy squared? Huh? XY squared, should be. Yeah. So, what was I talking about? Yeah, this whole idea that God is... Christianity is a better religion because you see all the scientific inventions came out of the West. That's something. Someone sent me some questions. And, now our devotees can't answer these silly questions. They have to send it all the way around the world to me. If you just read Bhagavad Gita as it is, you should be able to answer such silly questions. See, we're using refrigerators. The refrigerators are made by Christians, and that proves that Christianity is better. That's the logic. I mean, not only is it stupid, but it's also inaccurate, because all the science came out of defiance of Christianity, actually. Anyway, I'll talk about that in detail, if Krishna allows, after a few days. Yeah.
I have a question. Is there anything that Krishna cannot control?
Is there anything that Krishna cannot control? This is, in logic, this is called a non-question. It's like, can God create a square circle? It's something like, the nature of the Supreme Controller is that, by definition, he controls everything. So it's like, it's like saying a square circle. It's outside the definition. It's outside the realm of possibility. It's certain... yeah, everything has its particular characteristics by which it exists. A circle is a circle because it's not square. So to bring the idea of a square circle, it's oxymoronic. So to say, can God create a square circle... He has made certain things with different characteristics by which they are known to be different. So it's an irrelevant question. God means the controller of everything. That's the very definition. So if you say, is there anything he cannot control, then he's not God. So it's not a relevant question. If there's anything God cannot control.
Our feeling of surrender and love,
He gives us a little independence by which we can choose to serve Him or not to serve Him. If He didn't give us that, then we'd be complete robots. His control doesn't mean that He's like the sense of control people have when they're playing a computer game. I'm in control of some imaginary beings. Krishna gives limited independence. He can take that away also. He can do. But generally he doesn't. He gives us a limited independence by which we can choose to serve him or not to serve him. But ultimately the devotee thinks that it's all by his, everything's by his mercy. I'm a surrendered devotee. I'm a great devotee. But we understand that's all by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, that I can even engage in devotional service. We don't think it's me, you see. Out of my great kindness, I have decided to serve Krishna. Isn't he lucky? Because, you see, I saw so many gurus, and then I saw Prabhupada, and out of my causeless mercy, I decided to take initiation from Prabhupada. You see, he's so lucky. The devotee doesn't think like that. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Sri Sri Gauranitai Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.
So, Vishnu Sahasranama, discussing the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
here's a quote in relation to discussing the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 3, Verse 5, spoken by the Ritviks, or the priests at Nabhi's Yajna, which was performed for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu, and in which Lord Vishnu personally appeared. And the Ritviks combinedly said, "The chanting of your auspicious transcendental qualities will wipe out the sins of all mankind. This is the most auspicious activity for us, and we can thus partially understand your supernatural position." So by discussing the qualities of Vishnu, we do not expect to understand everything about him. There are several names which state that everything cannot be understood about him. But partially he can be understood. And the attempt to glorify him is auspicious for the devotee who does that. It's the most auspicious activity to glorify him. The name Prabhu, some more words about that. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 3, Text 5, the word Prabhu, which is generally understood to mean master, can also be understood to mean as follows. Pra means prakashena, or much so, excessively. And bhu indicates bhavati, or taking birth. So this is very interesting. One who takes birth a lot. Whereas another name of his, which is to be discussed soon, is Aja, which means he who is unborn. So this is one of the delights for the devotees in discussing the qualities of the Supreme Lord, how he has contradictory qualities. Both things are true about him. He's never born. Vishnu is never born. But he's born more than anyone. And that will leave you scratching your head or pounding your fist and saying that, you see, these people are talking all nonsense, but everything is possible for the Supreme Lord. He's unlimited. So, if we say he is the one who doesn't take birth, that's completely true. If we say he's the one who takes birth more than anyone else, that's also completely true. He takes birth in so many forms, so many avatars, and in one sense, and this should not be understood as Mayavad, but with every birth of every living being, the appearance of every living being, he also takes birth. So the birth of everyone is also the birth of him, inasmuch as every living being is a spark of him. Amayvangsho jivaloke jivabhuta sanatanaha. He accompanies every living being in their wanderings. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridyeshe juna tishtati. Brahmayan sarva bhutani yantrarudhani maya. So he manifests himself. Of course, this birth, the sense of coming into being from nothing, or from almost nothing, that does not apply even to the jiva, what to speak of Vishnu. But, that what is generally understood as birth, the birth of a body means the soul has entered, but with the soul enters the supersoul, Vishnu. So every birth of every living being is that also of Vishnu in one sense. And so he really takes birth a lot, especially for one who doesn't take birth. Other meanings of the name Prabhu, given by Sri Madhvacharya. Prakashena bhavati. So the same terms that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes as meaning one who takes many births. Sri Madhvacharya, using the same words to describe the word Prabhu, gets a different meaning out of it and says, who exists eternally without any change? There you are, there's Sanskrit scholarship. But of course, again, we have to understand this is not simply an intellectual exercise, but the Supreme Lord has, he manifests himself as every syllable and every sound, and particularly the Sanskrit language is meant for, well, everything, but especially that language is meant for glorifying him. So there are so many intricacies within it, but Sarve Veda Yatpadama Mananti, all the Vedas, they're simply meant for delineating that topic, which is Vishnu. So, Prabhu means who exists eternally without change. Prabhavati, then another meaning Madhva gives is Prabhavati Samartha Vartate. He possesses the highest and complete potency, the topmost and complete potency, unlimited strength, Purna Shakti. So in that way, he's the master of everything. The Prabhu is generally understood to be master. And another understanding that is he is omniscient. So these topics of his omniscience, his complete powers, his unchangeability, these are discussed in other names, but specifically in regard to these interpretations of the word Prabhu, Madhva says that the interpretation prakarshena bhavati shashvad eka prakarena vartate, the one who exists eternally without any change, Madhva says this understanding refutes the parinamavada concept, which is one of the theories of the Mayavadis or Advaitavadis. According to them, the world of matter is a direct transformation of the Supreme Lord, although Brahman by nature is unchangeable. So that he is unchangeable, he is never contaminated or affected by this process. So the one school of Advaita which says that Brahman becomes transformed as the, because they have a big problem. They say everything is one, but practically, and Brahman is all perfect and is just one entity. But the very fact of the world, which is all around us, it defies that conception. So they give the idea that the world is a transformation of Brahman. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced he stated the Shakti Parinamavada, that Brahman has unlimited Shaktis or potencies. So, what is that? Natasya Karyam Karnam Tavidyate Natat Samaschabhyatikas Chudrishyate. And then he has on the Swabhaviki Gyana Balena Kriyaha. He has unlimited potencies. Vividhaiva Shuyate. His potencies are of various types. So he's in many potencies. So his potency becomes altered. Not that he is altered. So this is all clear from Shakti, Shakti Matara Bhedaha. The Shakti and the Shaktiman, or the potency and the possessor, or the potency, are non-different, but still the very fact that there are two words, and one is the possessor of the other, indicates difference. So, Parasya, that's how I meant that. Parasya Shakti Vividhaiva Shuyate. So he has potencies, and the certain potencies may be transformed. So there are another funny idea of the Advaitavadis, Vivartavad. that again the Vivarta and Parinama, the two words are similar. Vivarta means that Brahman loses when Brahman transforms as the material substance, then Brahman is like a lower Brahman, they say. But that he is unchanging means that there's no question of a lower Brahman or higher Brahman. Then another idea they have, the Mayavadis, Maya Sarupatvavad. There are different schools of Mayavad in which the world's creation is similar to an illusory dream. And although sometimes we give that example, that this world is like a dream, but that's not for the Supreme Lord, because he never falls. Again, in one sense, it can be said that this whole world is like a dream of Mahavishnu, but it's not like a dream of this that we experience, which is just like some illusory state. He is never subject to illusion. So there are different meanings of the word Prabhu.